welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. As promised, today we're continuing our discussion on the next generation of technology that the Army's Future Command has been working on. Specifically, we're looking at the next generation of autonomous transportation vehicles that units will shortly see drive themselves into their motor pools, called the Autonomous Tactical Vehicle System, ATVS for short. I have with me today Mr. Hector Vasquez, who serves as the Robotic AI Team Lead in the Transportation Requirements Branch of Army's Future Command Sustainment Capability Development Integration Doctorate, CDID. He enlisted in the Army in 1991 as a Supply Logistics Warehouse Specialist and rose to the rank of Sergeant First Class before being commissioned as a Quartermaster Officer in 2002. He's held a variety of positions in his 25 years of service, including 4 deployments, 3 to Afghanistan and 1 to Iraq, before retiring in 2015 with the rank of Major. He attended the Inter-American University in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and graduated from Phoenix University, Sacramento, California campus, where he earned a bachelor's degree in Science of Business Administration. Later, he attended Southern New Hampshire University online, earning a Project Management Certificate. He is currently responsible for developing robotic AI requirements for all Army transportation systems, to include tactical wheeled vehicles, Army watercraft systems, and autonomous ground and aerial resupply systems. So happy to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Captain Pyle. I'm extremely excited to be here today. It is a venture going forward for our future forces. Autonomy and technology and the AI community will have to be embraced one way or another. There are challenges that we'll talk about. There are goods that we'll talk about. However, this capability will enhance transportation, will increase throughput, will place the soldier survivability at a greater plateau, and allows the combatant commander to extend and maintain the up-tempo reach and fight in the future battles.
Also, I am very excited to get today's discussion to see how we're advancing and how warfare is changing. One thing I have to just throw at you, did you ever see yourself doing this stuff before?
I have to be honest. I've read about it. Back in the day, there's always conversations that robots would be in our lifespan. So no, I never thought I would be working it, but I am extremely excited to be a part of it. I've been doing it for the past 5-6 years. ATVS, just as a part of it, has a history going back starting in 2014, but we won't go down that deep. But the capability right now that resides in competition, it's a good solution for the soldiers and the future battlefield and for the sustainers as a whole.
So first thing is, a lot of our listeners will be like, so what is this Autonomous Tactical Vehicle System, ATVS? They hear this, they're like, what are you even talking about?
So ATVS is an applique software capability. And I'll start off by saying that the first vehicle that will be used is the pelletized load system, which is the N1075A1, which will be converted to an A2, and I'll express here in a second how that happens. But it's a PLS, huh? And the truck will remain a truck, but it will have an applique and software apparatus placed on it. In order for that software and apparatus to work, you require what's called a BWAS, which is a by-wire active safety system, which is what utilized in all POVs today, lane departure, braking in front of you, all these safety mechanisms that are in POVs. What that does, it comes with a hub into where this ATVS kit is plugged, and with the software, it becomes autonomous. I would tell you that at this point, we have had the opportunity to see from one vehicle with soldiers and one without, to one with two, and so on and so forth, and has been tested up to one vehicle with soldiers and 4 vehicles without soldiers. So it is uncharted territory. It's a great moment and great time today to be a part of it, and it will continue to grow.
So you're saying it's you're adding sensors onto the vehicle. So just put into it to help paint a picture. Would it be like you're going to a CTC rotation and you're going and putting your miles gear on a vehicle? Is it something simple? Like, I'm not, of course, not that simple, but is it to paint the picture for the soldiers? Like, am I putting these things around the vehicle? Something like that? Or
Joe, so I go back to a couple of years where one of my boss used to say it's like a monster garage project, right? You have your F-150 and you just take all these things and you Lego it up with all these sensors. Well, for the PLS, it requires the BWAS, which is intrusive in nature, and that's not part of it's not the robotic kit, but it's the beginning stages of. However, everything surrounding would be, so to speak, like LIDARs, radars, cameras, GPS antennas, radio communication systems, and all these things come together, and then software allows it to become autonomous. I can actually tell you there are, I think we're on iteration number 5 of what this thing might look like moving forward, but the new vendors or the 2 vendors in competition right now, that would probably be sometime fielded here in the future, have taken the capability and from that monster garage picture, just ruggedize, or not ruggedize completely, but ruggedize part of it and make it look seamless on a vehicle. So you see the PLS and you're going to see some things added to the PLS.
Okay, so this isn't like you're building a whole new truck. You're taking existing vehicles and just adding equipment on, adding in a sense a modification.
Correct. It's a modification, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and the modification allows for teleop. I'll talk teleop real quick, is where a soldier will have a remote control inside the vehicle. And if a vehicle goes down, the March unit commander has the ability to pretty much, with a remote, remove that vehicle from either the hazard or use it moving forward to do a scan of an area and things of that nature. There's different types of employment of the capability. You have the pen stroke, which if you look at Google online, you can map out a route and ride your bicycle, right? Or use that route. So they can literally ink stroke that on what's called a warfighter machine interface and execute the route. You can do waypoint. Waypoint is understanding what it is and going and marking plots on the map and allowing it to go following the March Unit Commander. You can have the March Unit Commander drive a route, and it's the first time, well, we record the route. And now that's recorded, it stays within the WMI and in the system. So there's a lot that goes into it, but it's fascinating because it allows us, it allows the soldier to be flexible in how to employ and where to win the next fight.
Okay. So you're saying, so when it's employed onto the battlefield, those are different ways that these vehicles can maneuver. So pretty much you're talking about like the lead follower. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, just so you're talking about the lead follower way, or if the other vehicle is out in it, as you said, draws the route, the next vehicle then can just follow that same route.
Yeah.
And what was the other, or is there?
So you have waypoint, which is pretty much dotting the map.
Okay.
So that's waypoint, and then it creates the route. Ink stroke is, you know, the route, you just take a pen and just mark it and it just follows that, and then the recorded route.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's fascinating.
Okay. Awesome. So what capabilities does the ATVS bring to the battlefield?
So when you say capabilities, I look at it as what does it do for not just the company commander, but the soldier and then the combatant commander, right? He or she who's in charge of the battle space area. So one, it increases throughput. It allows the company commander to utilize his forces in an array of ways that never seen before, because prior organizations or prior deployments, you had to use everybody in the vehicle. So you needed a driver and a TC. Now you're moving some of those away from harm's way or being in that convoy. You can utilize some by placing them in the combat protected platforms, which are the gun trucks and things of that nature. You still require your recovery team, your medical, but what it allows the company commander to do is have a 24-hour cycle of operation, because he can utilize these trucks more with less personnel. So we stayed focused on one driver, one TC. at this point, I know, or we all know that have been part of the testing community and assessment community, is that they don't have to be in that front vehicle at this point. It can be anywhere within that formation. So it allows for flexibility as to, you can be the fifth vehicle and then the four in front of you don't have anyone in it. So, but they're following that route, that depicted route that has been established in the WMI. So like I stated earlier, increase of throughput, soldier survivability, a more agile formation moving down the road. It's scalable, it's seamless, it's resilient. Scalable sustainment and the capability allows for maximum flexibility for the company commander in the battlefield area.
Could you elaborate more on that, on this? What do you mean by scalable?
So scalable is, I can use it from, I don't need to use every single vehicle in that squad or in that formation. I can go from 1 to 9, 1 to 20, but allow the commander, he can use 1 to 3 for one formation, 1 to 4, 1 to 5 for others, and things of that nature, and still continue to utilize the capability without degradation to the folks. Yeah.
Okay. And it's really, it extends operational reach for those commanders.
Absolutely.
So they can be able to, as you said, more realistic 24-hour operations, because they're not worrying so much about a work rest cycle.
Correct.
As much as we've had to in the past. So there's benefit there on continue to push forward supplies.
Yes.
During that. Okay. What, so I guess, what are some like potential risks with this type of technology?
So currently we're informing Army regulations, fuel manuals, ATPs, in order for the community to understand what this capability brings to the future fight. Risk mitigating factors we've identified early. We've allowed commanders to see those, so that way they know forward what they're getting. The potential challenge for the technology is the messaging, the ability of community and the population to accept the technology. For me, that is like the biggest challenge, aside from policy. So policy will dictate how this capability will be utilized. Let's say, for example, Fort Bragg, a unit will deploy to the field. And in order to leave the motor pool, everybody expects, or everybody has this notion that the capability is just going to drive out to the field. The way, what we've done in order to assist the community understanding some of the risk at this point, is that no, soldiers will drive every single vehicle with the capability off to the field. Once the area is cordoned, then they can execute autonomous operations and employability out in the field, because at this point we don't have the liberty or the maximum range to drive across the cantonment area as such. So we're trying to look forward, make it easier for the community as a whole to accept technology, and give them the tools to get there earlier rather than face it and challenge it the entire way. If that makes sense.
Okay. Is that just, I guess, because you're not authorized yet to drive on cantonment roads yet with that? Is that why? Or?
So they can be utilizing cantonment roads. However, at this point, you were required to block the road network and things. Yeah, because we're not there yet, and policy hasn't allowed it to take place yet. So
okay.
Is the capability good enough for an NTC area out in the open? Absolutely. Is it safe in the cantonment area, as long as we put all mitigating risk factors in place? Absolutely. But I think the best thing to do is take it one step at a time, inform community, get policies in place. Let the soldiers learn more, become more adaptive of the capability, and continue to run with it.
Okay. So come from myself, who has, you know, a small robotics background when I was in high school and college and dealing with that technology. Seeing how, like, of course, everything's advanced. That's a decade ago, so I'm not, everything's advanced since then. But, like, when you're programming a robot to follow a line, for instance, if something were to just put a break in that line, it would just shut off. How does that equate with the technology that we're working with now? Like, does it like see something, just as say something stops, it passes, it's just going to shut down? Or are we able to, is it able to be reactive yet?
So two things. We have what's called in the system an O stop button, which if the March unit commander believes there would be a threat or something and he needs to immediately stop, he presses that button. The whole convoy slows down to a complete stop. We have that capability in there, allowing the commander to, the convoy commander and the March unit commander to execute. When you talk in reference of having an obstacle on the road.
Yeah. So say so, OEM placed an obstacle that wasn't there before.
So if there's a vehicle, let's just say, for example, a vehicle in the middle of the road. So we've gone into the capability and established what we call obstacle detection, obstacle avoidance. So many folks think, oh, well, that's just stopping and then somebody's going to get in and drive around. Now, the two vendors that we have right now competing actually can drive up, they sense left or right, they take the most suitable path and drive around the capability without problems. I know part of the obstacle detection, obstacle avoidance is to understand the risk of like a risk, water, things of that nature. So that's part of it as well. So
there.
But yeah, it's in existence.
Okay.
Others challenge it to not be AI. I say it is AI because it is an algorithm that the machine itself or the ATVS is slowing down for and making a decision to move around.
Okay. So would it be more under the realms of machine learning than AI, or is it going to be more?
I think we're past the machine learning because the software and the capability would have to have reached the point where of maturation where it is right now, where it gets to there, to that point. And then just goes around because it's making a decision on the spot.
Okay. I guess so. So it's able to go around wherever the obstacle is. So, and I just kind of want to go back to, say something happens with the program. Is someone able to just remotely take over and then be able to move it, or someone would have to get in the seat and drive it? If there was something, say something, I don't know, cable broke or battery, whatever craziness could happen.
So let's say the capability loses connectivity. We haven't seen it yet, but let's say it loses connectivity or something happens where it just loses its path from the convoy. The March unit commander slows it down, checks it out. The March unit commander is going to see in its warfighter machine interface, the WMI, that there's a fault. He will identify what the fault is. Then there's two things. He's either going to react to is like, hey, let's try to get this fixed, or hey, I need someone to get in the vehicle and drive it away, or get in the back of the formation and drive it, because the truck is still a truck. Now, because if the robotic kit or software has a challenge and can move forward, then the truck can still be driven. So just shut off the mechanical system of the robotic portion of it and then just have soldiers driving the convoy.
Okay, that kind of answers my next question. So these vehicles can still be manually driven?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We've not taken that capability, that asset from the unit. We're always going to have soldiers. So it would be in our best interest to remain with that, to keep that in the formation. Absolutely.
Okay. I didn't know if this was like a... You go up to a PLS and there's like not even a seat there anymore. It's all technology.
So that's coming. Because right now my team is working the medium modular equipment transport trailer, which we call MMET.
Okay.
And it's a flatbed. We're allowing vendors to determine 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 axles, whatever they want to put on it. But it's a flatbed. We're going with, let's say, 56 square feet at this point and things of that nature. And from there, the sky's the limit. ATVS, we'll try to bring ATVS or ATVS light to the MMET, and it will have, I think we're going away from ATVS, but it will have power storage, power distribution, and power throughput. So you have all three. It recharges itself while loitering. 60, it's 120 miles round trip, so 60 out, 60 back. So, I mean, it goes from the BSA down to the logistic resupply point.
Okay.
So
that's something we talked about doing another episode on, is getting more into the specifics of that.
We can definitely do that.
Yeah. So how do you see this technology, this ATVS, operating in large-scale combat operations?
So in LISCO, like I said earlier, it's going to enable the company commander. It allows flexibility to move things around the battlefield with greater freedom, I see. And we have the opportunity to sustain for longer hours, longer periods, and in a smarter way. And when I say smarter way is we've placed ourselves in a position where we don't have to put every single soldier in harm's way, right? That's one. So you reduce soldier exposure. You're coming from the DSSB to the BSA. So you're far, but not far enough, because we know what the enemy has some things that have a capability of possibly reaching us. And we've seen it through Ukraine, through the Ukraine fight. So for LISCO, it allows us to move in a more free, scalable, and smarter way to assist that combatant commander. And it's going to allow the combatant commander to not identify its position, its location, and the BSA and everybody will have the opportunity to be a maneuver formation as well, because they don't have to stay stagnant or establish a large supply system, a large pile of whatever it may be, like a water point, fuel point, or things of that nature. No, we will have capability of moving around the battlefield at a smarter pace.
Yeah, smaller footprint.
Correct, smaller footprint as well.
That's a huge thing, especially in LISCO, is having that smaller footprint, because the days of a giant BSA are gone, because it just, you are a huge target. And you can't conceal that. You can't protect that, especially against a near peer adversary.
Absolutely.
And it's just not feasible anymore. We'd just be more displaced, smaller footprints, getting into the base cluster concepts, where we could operate in a smaller footprint to be more overall lethal, because we can extend operational reach. So I just think that's neat how this technology can bring that capability. Not having, so many people in harm's way. I look at it as, and it's, everything can be utilized as a tool, such as used properly.
Absolutely.
How you can use it to your advantage. Everything can be found, every new piece of technology can have its benefits. It's always going to have pros and cons, but you got to be able to find out how it can be utilized as a tool to increase the lethality on the battlefield and especially survivability for the soldier.
And going back to what you just said adding on to it is, I've heard the comments of rolling BSAs. So will a BSA establish itself in an area, or will that BSA remain mobile throughout its entirety? So it's something that autonomy will allow it to happen, because they don't require the established footprint to support and sustain the future. Yeah.
Just thinking on it, just because having worked a lot with LHS and PLS systems, right now, is it just the driving part of it, or is it going to be able to like do its own offloading?
So that is one thing that we're working on right now, and we've asked industry to develop autonomous mechanisms on the PLS at Met and Speak as well, that would load, unload in order to minimize soldier interaction with that, and not even requiring MHE in the area. So it would either download the flat rack and pick up a new one, or it would just allow a fork to pick up a pallet, drop it at a known point, and then move out and continue to run forward. But yeah, that's something that we're looking and we're working with industry to place on ATVS. I know MMET is another solution that we're looking on, and there's a couple of others.
Awesome. And of course, you said this is all still in development.
Correct.
Right now. As you said, it's still going through the industry right now. I know that can take some time as they go through the competition of find the best solution, for the Army's needs.
Right.
Is there anything else you'd like to add just on this system that we haven't covered yet that is going to be good for the community to know about with the ATVS?
So one of the things that we haven't touched is fuel and ammo movement, right? So I going back through a couple of months, that was one of those things that we've been looking at, is establishing the pod on the flat rack and having an actual autonomous arm that will refuel the vehicle as it stops or whatever comes by. So that's something that's in the works as well. That's something that there are some vendors that have been working this. So that's something that's being introduced into the picture. And I think for ammo, it's just the ability to drive somewhere, drop it, and not have to stick around and then just depart the area. So it, that's benefits for everybody.
Okay. Awesome. It's good to see. I always want to see, you know, what, because sometimes we miss stuff. It's good to see how you're factoring in fuel and ammo planning. Cause especially here, like, as on the officer side of the house, when you're working in a support operations center, understanding like, how am I going to be all the planning factors? And I think this adds that new capability in. So we talked about before, reducing that work rest cycle. So I need to be able to push these supplies forward, going through at the career course. We're always, you know, teaching the students on, hey, this, you have your sync mat. You need to plan out when these supplies are going forward. How you need to do a supply every 20, at least once 24 hours or whatever it may be.
Correct.
And this just adds that unique capability into the force and what, people need to be aware of when they're doing these planning factors, when they're going through their estimate tools.
Correct.
On how to get this stuff pushed forward. I mean, this has been awesome. Anything, like, what advice would you have for the sustainment community? You know, it doesn't have to just be on ATVS, but coming from your long background of working logistics and now into the robotics side of the house.
I don't think as advice, but as a whole, the sustainment community understands that this is a long road, and we've been on this road for a while, and it's finally coming to fruition. So as a whole, work as a team and work with each other in order to get this across the finish line. Because I see company commanders back from the day that are still in, and they're like, I can't believe it that I'm literally seeing vehicles without no one in it following another vehicle. I said, yeah, we talked about this in the prior times. Now we're seeing it. And in the future, is for those that are in it now, understand how valuable it is for them and how great it's going to be for them in the future.
Awesome. Now, this has been an awesome conversation. Really enjoy being able to sit down with you, get a better understanding of the ATVS system. But if anyone would like to have any follow-up questions or be able to reach out to you, where's a good place for people to be able to find you?
They can email me at hector.m.vasquez.civ@army.mil, or they can look me up on Teams, at the government Teams as well. And I don't have that phone number, but in the next one, I'll probably have it and issue it out.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, just so if anybody has any follow-up questions, they can be able to reach out to you and get some more direct information.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Of course, want to, you know, thank you for coming in today, sir, you know, taking that time to provide us a good detailed overview of the ATVS to our listeners. New technologies are always going to bring new capabilities and challenges to the battlefield. I'm interested to see how we continue to employ autonomous equipment. I know we have many more conversations in the future with such technology.
I would open it up, not just to stay on the ATVS, but we have medium mobile equipment transport trailer, and we actually have Joint Tactical Autonomous Aerial Resupply System. It's called JTARS. So the team has three capabilities that we're working. So we literally have two grounds, one air. Two of those stay in the front or at the EAB, edge of the battle space, which is MMET and JTARS, and then ATVS, PLS equipped, back from the DSB to the BSA. But it's commensurate to see them in the future working together, as the PLS equipped ATVS system will drop capabilities off at the BSA. And then from the BSA, you'll have the possibility of an MMET picking up that resupply and pushing it forward into the LRP. To the folks down and straight at the edge of the battle space. But yes, it's been great being here today, having this conversation with you, and look forward to many others.
Oh yeah, we're definitely going to continue this conversation, because this is the future. This is the world that we live in today, hugely technology driven. So definitely have more conversations on how we're employing this technology onto the battlefield. So once again, thank you so much, sir. But that is all we have today, folks. I hope you all enjoyed everything. Be on the lookout for more episodes specifically on things coming out from the Army Futures Command and how we're going to be employing this technology on the battlefield. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.